Hello everyone, and welcome to the fourth episode of the Strings of Thought podcast. Today, I'm joined by the classical guitarist and composer Laura Snowden. What you just heard was her own composition called Anpal. Today we'll get to learn more about Laura's guitar journey over the years and some of the most crucial lessons she has learned from her coaching with Julian Bree. Hello, Laura, and welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
So can you tell us a little bit about how you first started with the guitar?
Yeah, so my first time hearing the guitar played was on a recording by Ralph McTell, who's a singer-songwriter, and I just thought the guitar sounded so beautiful, and I really fell in love with its sound. And also my dad had a guitar at home. And at the time I was really into the Spice Girls, and so I think perhaps I thought I'd go into pop music, but then when they broke up, I was just so upset, and I thought, oh, there's nothing left for me in pop music anymore. The only solution is to bury my sorrows in the classical guitar.
So did you start with the classical guitar?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I actually wanted to have lessons at my school when I was in year four, so that's at the age of eight. But the teacher was full, there was no space. And so I got this book out from the library by Frederick Knode and used that to learn for the first year. And then by the time I got to year five, thankfully someone who wasn't particularly enthusiastic about the guitar had dropped out. And so then I could start lessons.
What are the things that fascinate you the most about this instrument?
There's a lot of things, actually. I think it's a very human instrument, and you find a guitar or a guitar-like instrument in almost every culture. And so I think it's very universal, and it's the kind of instrument that you can just whip out and, you know, use to play a song or play in the corner. It's much harder to do that if you get your cello out and play a little song in the corner. And so I think it is a very universal instrument, and also the sound of it is so enticing and so magical. I think it's a sound that really invites the listener in, it draws people in, whereas a lot of instruments, I suppose, they go out to the audience, whereas this is something that brings people towards it. And it can evoke such distant lands and magical places, and invites the listener to dream. And it's an instrument that has such wonderful resonances and colours, and particularly all the harmonics and the way that the overtones are on the guitar is so beautiful, so subtle. But then I suppose another thing that also fascinates me about it is the physical connection with it, because you're cradling it, this wood, and both of your hands are on the instrument. But actually, it can be a very physically challenging instrument to play, I think, as well, bizarrely, as even though it's something that's in every culture, and it seems like it ought to be quite simple, it's quite a quiet instrument, it's not like, if you hear someone playing the trumpet or something, you think, yeah, that seems pretty hard. Like, it's just got that, because it's so loud and it's got such potential to go wrong. Whereas the guitar, you'd think it was easy, and then it's actually surprisingly difficult to play on a physical level.
What do you think about when you perform in front of an audience?
That's a cool question. Well, I think part of it is that I want to really be in a very generous and giving state of mind, and it's easy to feel nervous, and I frequently do, but I try to think about the fact that I'm trying to give the audience something and to enter into it with a spirit of generosity, so that even if I feel nervous, in a way I'm still having that giving state of mind. And ideally, not that I necessarily achieve this 100%, but ideally I like to set up the conditions so that in performance I can be totally free to do whatever feels right at that very moment, because every single performance is different. It's a unique set of people there, a unique place, it's a unique experience, and that's kind of the point of live performance. And I think in order to set up those conditions, your practice actually has to be something where you're really engaging the imagination. For example, it would be, I don't think it would work to practice in a way that's very fixed, and you think, okay, I'm gonna do that crescendo there, I'm gonna do this here, and then you go into the performance and you think that somehow magically you're gonna suddenly feel really free. So I think it's actually that in the practice you have to be engaging the imagination every single time. So every time you play a phrase, you have to feel it anew and afresh, and feel the emotion of that phrase and feel what it's doing every single time, so that you're responding to what you hear in a present and kind of natural way. I was really influenced by this book by Stanislavski, the actor and acting teacher, called An Actor Prepares. And in that he talks a lot about kind of letting the unconscious mind do its thing. So you're almost trying to consciously set up the conditions for the unconscious to be able to flow. And I think there's one bit where he says, if you do something that kind of doesn't feel right, then the unconscious mind becomes startled and kind of can't keep flowing. So it's almost like I'm trying to set up the conditions for this kind of flow.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm.
And do you think that... you always manage to achieve that freedom in your performance?
Not particularly, but I think the desire to do it is already something, and it certainly affects the way that I practice and the way that I think about what I'm doing. And then there's just sort of small things, because even the way that you're talking to the audience, for example, I often try to say something that I think I could only have said to this group of people on this particular day. So almost an acknowledgement of this particular situation being unique. And often, like, some little bit of banter or something will suddenly come to me that I could say about, I don't know, the journey on the way there, or some funny thing that happened just before the concert or even during the concert. And that will kind of come to me, and I try to just let that be free and let that come out, rather than, for example, a rehearsed speech that you do the same at every concert. Because although that might sound like a small and superficial thing, speaking, at the same time, it helps me to get into the kind of spirit and freedom of the experience, and I think it helps the audience as well.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. It changes the atmosphere.
It does, yeah. I remember actually Gary Ryan, the teacher at one of the teachers at the Royal College of Music, he said something about you're responsible for creating the atmosphere that you want to have in your concert. And I thought that was a really nice thought, because sometimes we can go in and be like, what is wrong with this audience today? Why are they so quiet, or why are they so loud, or whatever it is? And it's a bit the idea, well, you're responsible for creating this
thing with them. In front of them.
At the same time, sometimes an audience does just have a specific dynamic, and it's kind of nothing you can do to change that. They just have a particular collective personality, but at least you can kind of be alive with that in the moment and kind of work with that.
How has your relationship with the guitar changed over the years?
Well, that's likely to be, I think, quite a long answer, because it's been quite a journey. But in the beginning, I actually started out composing. I wasn't really playing the guitar. When I was about 7 or 8, I had a tape machine. That's probably before your time. Did you ever have a tape machine?
Not really.
So I used to record my songs on there, just the melodies and the words, and I didn't play an instrument or anything. I think I was writing a musical. And so I was actually doing that before I ever took up the guitar. And I was really interested in creative writing. I loved theatre and acting. I was unfortunately not very good at it, which I found very sad, because it was something I really wanted to do. And I loved art, drawing and painting, also very bad at it. And I just enjoyed all these really creative things. And so in a way, I would say the guitar was just part of a very small thing as part of this creative palette of things that I liked to do. If anything, I found the guitar to be perhaps one of the least creative of them, because playing, I think, as I mentioned earlier, is physically very difficult. So to even play a melody with wonderful feeling and communicate some essence of something is really difficult, I think, on the guitar, unless you're really physically very adept. And so it was almost more natural for me to put fierce amounts of creativity into writing a song or a story or drawing a picture or something. It's perhaps more natural to us because language and words, or you know, simple shapes and drawings are perhaps easier for us to create with initially than notes and this kind of new language of music. When I was 16, I happened to be reading Classical Guitar magazine, as you do, and then I saw an advert that the Menuhin School was now taking guitar students, thanks to a donation from the Rolling Stones, the singular Rolling Stone. And then I applied and I got a place. That was a really amazing experience for me because I went there and I learned so much about music. I learned about music history, harmony, I learned more formal composition, oral, I learned to play the piano badly. So all of these things that I wouldn't have done before. And so that also helped a lot with, you know, to inform the way I was playing and the way I was thinking about the guitar. And then when I went to the Royal College of Music during my first year, an advert came round the student bulletin from a guy called Rory Glasheen, asking whether anyone wanted to play some folk music and go busking and see where it takes us, it said. And so I responded to that, as I had a kind of a background in folk music. My dad played the Irish tenor banjo, and my parents are both from Celtic backgrounds. And so we ended up growing into this folk band called Tyrolis. And that was a really transformative experience for us because it was something so joyful, so personal, so creative. We were writing lots of the songs and arranging them ourselves. Something about the spirit in which we were doing the concerts as well, like the way we were having banter with the audiences and the way we would present things, the kind of venues we were playing at. It was so different from what I'd known within the classical guitar concerts that I'd been doing. And so I think that really changed the way I was thinking about what I was doing as well.
It changes your perspective on how you play the guitar or how you perform it even.
Yeah, I think so. It's just sort of giving you a completely different experience of what it could mean to be a performer and a musician. And also during that period, I met Judith Kleinman, one of the Alexander Technique teachers at the Royal College of Music. And the Alexander Technique department there is just utterly wonderful. And that really helped me hugely because it helped me to find so much more freedom and joy in the playing. It was really life-changing. And what I was saying earlier about trying to find a more natural and creative emotional connection with the instrument, that really helped with that because it actually helped me physically.
Yeah, because you don't just connect your mind but also connect your body to the instrument.
Exactly,
as well,
yeah.
To what you're doing.
Yeah, because often we think that by wishing harder and trying harder,
yeah,
we can make it. Like, oh, why is this not working? I'll just practice it 20 more times and just try harder. And there's an extent to which sometimes having a really strong intention and a strong desire can make great things happen. But sometimes we just reach a block. It's like, yep, I've tried really hard for a lot of time, and this is just, my fingers just don't want to do this.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but they just don't. And so then you've got to be looking for other answers, I think, and it can be more about the whole relationship with the body, or perhaps some deeper psychological issues that are, you know, not going to be solved just by wishing harder for this phrase to be more legato.
Yeah. It's a sign that you have to do something different.
Exactly, yeah. That's one of the things that's really difficult, because when we're used to doing things in a certain way, it can feel very scary, isn't it, to try and do something in a completely new way.
Mm.
But actually, I think most of the better things that I've done musically have tended to come from taking a bit of a chance on something, or a bit of a leap into the unknown, and actually trying to do something in a new way. I have to say, that was one of the things with the Alexander technique in the beginning, was that because Judith would be showing me ways of doing things that were different from what I was used to, sometimes it feels almost uncomfortable, or a bit, you know, you don't have your safety blanket anymore, because you think, oh, this is not what I'm used to. And actually having the courage to kind of give that a go and to keep looking at it, sometimes in the end, that's actually how I've found more freedom and happiness.
What is the most important lesson you've learned from Julian Bream?
Yeah, so when I was, I think it was in about 2013 or 14, I started working with him through the Julian Bream Trust, which is a wonderful charity that he set up, whose purpose, they've got two main purposes. One is to help support young guitarists and lutenists at the colleges in the UK, and their other mission is to commission new music, a bit like how Julian commissioned so many fantastic pieces throughout his career. And now he's still continuing to commission these amazing new works. And so I did a couple of concerts at the Wigmore Hall as part of that, in which I premiered two of his new commissions. And so we worked together on the programmes for those and preparing them. And it was just an amazing experience, because I think he's just the most wonderful musician. And to have an insight into such a deeply musical mind, it was just something really tremendous. And the thing I found so beautiful was I felt that his whole way of looking at life and of thinking in general was so meaningful, so thoughtful, and it kind of linked into all aspects of music. And I remember very early on he said to me something like, music is a way of life, and I really felt that that was reflected in his whole philosophy. So it's not like you can just somehow learn music in isolation from everything else. Just then it's sort of connected perhaps to the whole way of looking at the world and the whole way of living, at least in his case. And also one thing he said to me was that it's always very important to have a reason why. And so in his teaching, he will always, you know, if you suggest that you do something, he always gives a reason why. And it's a very beautiful reason and a very profound and thoughtful reason. And he said that you've got to be looking at, what is the composer trying to say, and how is he or she trying to say it? So we're really looking at the components of the music itself, like what's really there, what does that mean, what effect does that have, what's the music actually doing, and sort of trying to convey that in a way that can be understood by the audience. And I think that whole idea of asking why was so profound, because then, you know, when you go home and you practice, you remember the reason, you remember that even more than you remember the thing itself. And actually, perhaps in the end, you won't even do the thing itself. Perhaps it was, I don't know, you're going to have a staccato on these few notes and move here, and it's because the music is moving in this direction because blah, 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 and, you know, a whole big long reason why. And you might actually, in the end, remember the reason, but perhaps for you, the actual external result is going to be a little bit different. And so you're learning about the heart of the music and what's really there, not so much about the external kind of result of it, if you like. Because what can easily happen is that we listen to a recording, say, and we just copy the external gestures and the external result of what's happening.
Yeah.
And actually the interesting part is really why that's happening, why the person's doing that.
How did you start composing, and what does composing for the guitar mean to you?
Well, I started with those little tapes and with my songs, and then I think I composed sort of bits and bobs generally throughout my life, really. When I went to the menu in school, I learnt a little bit more formally about composition, and when I was at the Royal College of Music as well. I think the guitar composition to me is quite interesting because the guitar feels like such a part of me that when I sit down to compose for the guitar, I almost feel like everything's been done. Like, everything I play feels like, nope, I've heard that before. It feels so familiar, but I think it's because the guitar feels like it kind of is me, and I just feel like I'm just composing sort of myself. It's a very strange feeling, and I think that's probably why I've been drawn to quite unusual sounds and textures with the instrument. So I love things like lots of harmonics. I love using the voice as well and trying to incorporate things like pitch bends with the harmonics, like I did in that piece that you heard earlier, An Pao. And partly perhaps because I was always really interested in songwriting, I loved to sing, I love folk songs, I love listening to many, many songs and songwriters. It's a great passion of mine, and I've always loved words as well. And so I think perhaps that's why I've been drawn to using the voice with the guitar as well. To me, there's something very natural about incorporating the voice. But it can, you know, it can be annoying because I often feel I've heard everything before. I don't know. And that's why I'm almost drawn to sort of overly experimentative things, because I feel sort of bored of everything.
Yeah.
Whereas perhaps if I write for something else, and I do really enjoy writing for other instruments as well, because then often it will be the first time I'm writing for it, and perhaps I'm discovering loads of new repertoire and thinking, oh, maybe I try that, maybe I try that, and it's not like so intensely personal.
Yeah. It's extending your understanding of music as well.
It definitely does, yeah. I think that's actually been one of the things that I think has really helped me with my playing, because the way that I compose somehow helps me with my analysis of music. And I don't mean analysis in a particularly academic way. I'm not really doing like Schenkerian analysis or anything, but it's just the way I'm examining what the composer has done. I definitely think it's transformed by the fact that I compose. And also just funny little things like I often will write something and later I change my mind about it. Or I realise when you come with the players and you think, no, actually that tempo that I've written, that's not going to work. Let's change it to this tempo. Or someone just plays something different and you think, hey, I actually like that better. Just do that. And so it shows me how flexible these things can be. So sometimes we imagine that the piece just came to the composer just like that, all perfectly written. It was always meant to be like that. It always will be. And actually, who knows, maybe that composer would have wanted to change something like a few years later. Or perhaps there was a version earlier that they actually might have preferred. Or it shows the kind of flexibility of it.
It doesn't have to be finished.
No, I mean, it's like a... something, it depends on the composer, and I'm sure plenty would, you know, say, no, this is the absolute definitive exact thing. But I do just find it interesting when you write how many versions of it could have existed. And also for me these days, I'm doing a lot more improvisation, and I'm writing a lot through improvisation, and again you sort of think, well, that just came out like that in a sudden moment, and it kind of meant something to me, but it could have been something completely different.
Yeah, in a way, when you do that, your work is kind of never finished.
Yeah, I think that's also, it's just a bit when the deadline comes, that's when it's finished.
Yeah. What are you currently working on?
So at the moment I'm working on a piece for guitar quartet, for the Mella Guitar Quartet, who are utterly brilliant. And they're going to be premiering that piece at the Purcell Rooms on the 5th of May, I think, alongside a premiere by Steve Goss and also Michael Finnessy. And then I'm also working on a piece for choir, which is part of a scheme called Adopt a Composer, where they pair you with an amateur music group and commission you to write for that group. The piece that I'm working on is using poetry by this amazing poet called Cherry Smith, and that will be premiered in July, I think, and also broadcast on Radio 3.
What do you hope for?
In the future? It's really hard to say, because I think in the past I might have had certain very specific ambitions that I thought meant something. Like, you know, I want to have played in this place, or to have played with this person, and these very particular things. Whereas now I think I'm seeing my life in a much more blended sort of way, so much more holistically in a way. In a way, I'm not sure that there's any one particular ambition that I'm trying to reach. I think I'm more and more deepening my relationship with the guitar and with music, trying to find more freedom, more creativity, work with people that I find really interesting, wanting to bring something of value to other people, whether that's through teaching and sort of helping people in their playing and their connection with the instrument, or composing, or whether that's through the way that I'm giving concerts and the sort of output. But right now I'm feeling quite open in a way about what I might do next and about what it's all about.
Thank you so much for taking part in this podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's really nice to talk to you.
Yeah, nice to talk to you too. If you enjoyed this episode of the podcast, please leave a comment and share it with your friends. Thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you in our next episode.